Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're sort of edging our way through a wine primer across the Italian north.
It's just such a great region. The wine is just so amazing, and then all the wonderful food dishes that we've had the opportunity to try.
I think Piemonte is your happiest place to eat in Italy.
What do you think that is?
I think, well, I'm not going to say just because it's closer to France, but just because it's closer to France.
Oh, yum.
Well, when you think about it, the Kingdom of Savoy, you know, the Reggio di Savona, was on both sides of the Alps. So there's a lot of exchange, and a lot of the cheese making is similar in parts of Piemonte and in parts of France near Chambéry. You know, so that's...
Gosh, and how like protected those cultures must have been because of how difficult it was for them to travel anywhere. You know, they must not have had, you know, they had their influences, but they couldn't have had too many other influences because
it was
hard to get there.
Hard to invade.
Yeah, hard to get there, hard to invade, and hard to leave, probably.
I mean, the Genoveses had influence, but mostly as merchants, you know. And
Well, and the other great thing is that, thank goodness, there are white truffles in this region, so.
Oh.
Yes.
Well, the only white truffles, and that's, that was a... cool thing to see you at a favorite restaurant, maybe in sometimes my favorite restaurant in Piemonte, not the most adventurous, but a large, very nice family restaurant called Bovio in the village of La Morra in Barolo. They had a what you think of as being like a big glass cheese dome, right?
Oh,
and
my gosh.
Cindy, what was inside that dome?
White truffles. Oh, my gosh. When we walked in, it was just sitting there on the table. And one, I wanted to go over and hug it. And two, I just wanted
to
lift
the mushrooms.
Yeah, I wanted to hug the mushrooms. I wanted to lift the glass dome.
No.
It took every bit of
bad child.
ounce of control in my body to not just run over and just attack those truffles. And then, oh, gosh, the greatest thing is when you get to eat truffles in the countries in which they grow is how much you get to eat. You know, I mean, they're obviously less expensive there. They don't have to be exported, and frankly, you can walk out your door and go find them. And when you do that, they're free.
I don't know that it's that easy to walk out your door and find them.
No, but we all know those areas are protected, but still, it's less. I mean, they're still very expensive, of course, but they're less expensive than what we have to pay for them. And as a chef, I know. And when you sit down and you have this amazing house-made pasta, that's incredible pasta just to start with, and you just be happy to have that pasta with some butter and some, you know, Reggiano or some local cheese on it, and then they just start shaving white truffles all over it. I mean, it's just the sensual experience of that is absolutely amazing. I mean, the sensory
the
experience
remarkable.
Is crazy. Yeah, the aroma is amazing, and you're just, I mean, you know, talk about eating with your eyes and all of your senses. I mean, long before that food hits your tongue.
That's eating with your nose.
Right, exactly. You know, long before it hits your palate, you're just like, oh my gosh, I know this is going to be incredible. I love Bovio. You know, and the other restaurant, Del Posto, is, you know, just as...
Trattoria Del Posto.
Oh my gosh. Oh my
gosh.
Just
outside of Monforte d'Alba.
I love that place. And, you know, both places are situated on top of the hill. And, you know, they have these great outdoor, you know, Bovio has almost like a terrace.
A panorama, yeah.
Yeah.
They do have a terrace.
Oh my gosh. And if you can go there at the time of the year where you can sit outside, actually a friend of mine, a couple of friends of mine that are priests recently went on a trip there and they got to sit there and eat. And they were told they didn't have a reservation. So they begged to stay. And they went out and they got to sit outside. And I think they were even happier that they got to have that experience.
I think if there's someone that can ask for a table to get it in Italy,
priests.
Might be the guys in the collars, you know. Just.
Oh, gosh. But they had an amazing experience. And it is. And Del Posto has the same thing. You know, they have a little bit of outdoor seating. And it doesn't matter what time of the year you go there. And they have these. I'm going to go on. We have to get back to wine.
You get, like I
get
said,
so excited.
You get excited.
I do. I just love the food of that region.
Well, the pasta is remarkable. The two really best known dishes, the tagliarini,
love that dish.
And it's usually just a relatively simple pork ragu.
Mm-hmm.
But the pasta style itself, it's just egg and flour. There's no other addition to it. And sometimes it's just egg yolk and flour and salt. Mm-hmm. And that makes for a very rich style just to begin with. So that's got to be up your alley.
And that's so great because you can just feel the history. You can feel the family history in those dishes. And you know each lady has her own version of how this is absolutely supposed to be made. But, of course, in the end, it's all basically the same idea, which is ground pork. And, oh, my goodness, that is a great dish. You have to have that when you go to that region.
But it's a matter of cooking and care.
Right. And I had never had vitello tonnato in the United States. So to have it there.
That's a poached veal tongue.
Oh, my gosh. It's so good. And to have it made traditionally and have it made well and to have it made in the region where it started is a remarkable experience, which is, quite frankly, why I like to go on these trips, because I want to taste the way it's supposed to be made. And then when we make it, we do our best to duplicate.
This is one of those things that not everyone. I'm going to say exactly what it is. And mm-hmm. I started with the poached veal tongue, mm-hmm. and the sauce is a mayonnaise, like a house-made mayonnaise with extra yolk and preserved tuna and usually pickled garnishes and that sort of thing on the plate. Maybe doesn't sound like the most sexy thing in the entire world.
It's so good.
It's pretty darn fun to eat.
Yeah. Yeah. You would not think preserved tuna mashed up with mayonnaise, basically, to put it in not the most chef-like terms, over some veal tongue. You would not think it would go together, and it is delicious when it's executed well.
Well, it does also goes to show you it's usually some barbetta, some really sharp, bright red like that you serve with that, or agave, Cortese, white grape, something
Cortese.
Crunchy, mm-hmm. crunchy with good acidity that
delicious.
They can kind of clean that up as you go along.
And what about Agnolotti del Plain? Is that the right way to say it?
Agnolotti del Plain.
I know that's one of your favorites.
Absolutely. I think my favorite place for that still, they're a little misshapen because in this place, Agnolotti are little square packages, basically. And del Plain means they got a pinch. And it's a filling of usually a variety of meats, usually pork-based, but it could be whatever's kind of around. And every nonna, every grandmother has her own way of getting it done, making the filling, that forcemeat for it. Whether there's more cheese, more breadcrumb, less breadcrumb, with their egg in there, there's not. Is it meat? Is it organ meat as well? And Prezza, the hotel, the winery, and they have a little restaurant. His mom uses a lot of pork liver as part of the filling, and that's so sweet.
Good.
I love that. I think I like Agnolotti del Plain more there. But there are places that are famous for the ones that are literally like steamed in cheesecloth and come to the table like with just a cover on, and they're really, really pristine.
The other thing about Del Posto is you can kind of glance into the kitchen when you're there, too. And the bathrooms are the best. There's like a tub in the bathroom. It's like,
if
it's an
old
house.
On food and wine and bathrooms. There we go. Change of pace this Sunday. let's do a little bit of quick information on some other regions. What
All right,
do you think?
Let's do it. Because we have a long way to go.
Stay out of the bathroom. So, north of Piemonte. South of Piemonte. This is an easy way to remember it. North of Piemonte is an alpine region, the Valle d'Aosta.
They're famous for
one cheese.
I don't remember.
Oh.
Oh my God, what cheese?
Fontina Valdosta.
Oh, of course. Oh my gosh. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so remarkable. And that tells you're right at that French-Italian change over there. And the language they speak is even like a patois of Piemontese and French. It's not the easiest to sort out. But that's a beautiful region, and it's mostly rites, Chardonnay grown, Chambav, other native varietals. Reds are kind of like medium-bodied and firm, Petit Rouge and Tourette being probably the two best known of the local varietals. You'll also see Syrah sometimes if it gets enough sun, or even Pinot Noir. That can be pretty in the best places, but not a giant growing region, more of an eating region.
That's for sure. Oh my goodness. the cured meats and the cheese dishes. The first time I ever had the raclette there, and, you know, and particularly in Cognier, at the base of Mont Blanc, which is an amazing village and, again, one of the most beautiful places you could ever go.
Raclette with the little steamed potatoes that they have.
Yeah, little potatoes come in a little basket. They're warm. And then they, you know, you're sitting at your table and the cheese is melting underneath the little, like, 1950s, I don't even know what to call it. It almost looks like a toaster.
Cheese melter?
That, or, and then they have the, and we had plates of dried meat, dried beef with that. Oh my gosh. I mean, that was, and then you're sitting there looking out the window, looking at Mont Blanc, which is one of the highest peaks in the Alps. But the mountain food is just remarkable. So what wine, you know, goes with that then, in particular, would you say?
You drink the locals, you drink the whites. I mean, that's, you know, so the white from Morgex, probably one of the brightest, most mineral ones.
Yeah, that was a great experience.
So it contrasts Valarosta with south of Piemonte on the coast. So purely Mediterranean coast. It's the, you know, it's the Ligurian Riviera, that area. And you think of, you know, Cinque Terre is down there, vacation. That's, you know, more of the Riviera from France, just kind of like swings around past Nice and towards Genoa, but it's
that's beautiful too. Oh my gosh, that coastline is amazing.
It's very pretty. You get past a bunch of rugged mountains.
Wow.
And there are actually vineyards that grow there. But they're all purely, they're things that are great for fish coming from the area right there, for fish and for some of the shellfish that you get there. And Scarfano, when you can get it, the scorpion fish that's so flavorful. But you think of really one white, principally Vermentino, and a lot of versions of it. You'll also see Pigato, and both of these are things that are, that one Vermentino more than Pigato, that's almost like, there's like a salinity, like it's balanced with seafood inherently. There's a richness to the fruit that's on this wine that can be almost oily. The French call the grape Rolle, and if it ripens all the way, it's almost coppery on the vine. Pigato is more, a little more spicy, a little more maybe white peppery, bright, and the little spikes of exotic fruit to it sometimes, but they'll harvest it a little bit green, and that's good for a lot of the crudi, a lot of the raw fish and raw shellfish, you know, scampi with the roe served raw, which is like a little fresh lemon and that's amazing with
such great seafood.
Great Pigato.
Right out of the water. What producers do you like?
There's so many small producers, and I don't want to. It's
okay.
Honestly, you're lucky to get stuff into the U.S. for the most part. There are only a few things that come. Almost everything is consumed locally. Termine is a good producer, Pigato. There are two old zones for growing, Rosese del Dolceacqua. And Rosese is one of the red grapes that you see. And that's almost more like rose petals than Barolo is, and it's really bright and light-bodied. And that's great with really great, like, oily skin fish, like you're grilling sardines or something like that. Eels, fantastic.
I wish we were doing that right now.
That's would be unusual in Baltimore in February. The other area is the area that sounds so romantic. It's the Riviera Ponente, Riviera Ligure di Ponente, which is the area right along the coast where the beautiful, like, green forests are that, like, fall right down to the sea. And that's where you see all the white grapes growing, as well as Ormeasco sometimes. Ormeasco is a cousin of Dolcetto, and it literally is kind of a chunky red. This is me saying you avoid that. So that covers north and south of Piemonte.
Good.
And then In the center, you have Lombardia. Lombardia is a huge area, and Milan is the capital, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's zones sort of all around that. The most famous thing these days coming out of that area is actually Franciacorta, which is the wine that they promote as being, and they make it in the style of Champagne, and they promote it as being qualitatively similar to Champagne, and they package it very much like Champagne. And the very best wines are pretty darn good. They're not that similar to Champagne because they're grown so differently as far as they may grow them in the same style, but the places are so different, the soils are so different.
Sure.
And there's some, it's just a giant difference to how far they were away from the sun.
What grape are they using?
Same grapes for the most part.
Huh.
Chardonnay, Pinot Noir. They grow a decent amount of Pinot Bianco as well.
Okay.
And once in a while you'll see
say
other...
Say what it's called again?
Franciacorta.
Franciacorta.
It's, they've marketed it. Here's the thing that's kind of the tough thing about it, is they priced it just at champagne level or a little below. So an awful lot of consumers have said, well, if I don't know this, I'm just going to drink champagne.
Hmm.
And so it's not caught quite as well. That being said, Italians probably drink more sparkling wine than anyone I've ever seen in my
That's
life.
That's interesting.
My statistics say that Italy grows more wine, consumes more wine than any other nation. So if you don't really have to, if you don't really want to buy their sparkler, it's probably going to be okay for them.
Because they like it. They'll drink
and,
it.
And we'll certainly drink it on vacation there in one of the, mm-hmm. you know, one of the resorts on the lakes or whatever.
Very good.
The but that's Franciacorta. The other things you see in Lombardia, you see Nebbiolo again.
Okay.
Way up north in the Valtellina. And that's a valley that runs right along near the Swiss border, just south of Switzerland. And these are vineyards that grow Nebbiolo both for red and white. They just remove the skins, just like they would in Champagne.
Okay.
Hmm. And they also do a Nebbiolo called Sforzato, and that is Nebbiolo that's laid out and dried, like Amarone is, or like Recioto.
But it's wine.
Is.
It's wine.
But it's wine.
Huh.
Well, Amarone is wine. It's just, it's a little bit sweeter finishing and sweeter seeming.
Okay.
And they do the same thing with Nebbiolo, so it's a totally different expression, again, of that same grape, which is, like when you think about it, Nebbiolo is one of the really remarkable grapes in the world because of the range of expression that it has.
So many things are done with it, too, and, apparently.
But by the way, it doesn't grow well anywhere else in the world besides northwest of Italy.
There you go. Good
that's,
for them.
That's one of the curious things. And then you see other little oddball things like wines along the Leggarda, Chieretto, or you see Bonarda. You see all kinds of, I'm not going to list all the grapes that are grown. Otrepo Pavese is an area that does lots of fizzy reds that are kind of sweet. You start to see this across this part of the center of the north and then down to like Parma and that sort of thing. And when you think about all the prosciutto country and all the hams and all that sort of business, those things and a lot of those cheeses that are famous there, like Parmigianos, they're great with these like 9% alcohol, a little bit sweet, very fizzy red.
Yeah.
It's super fun.
I'll never forget the time we were at Primo's place and had for our cheese course was an amazing piece of Parmigiano, and they gave us balsamic vinegar with it, and I had never
ancient balsamic vinegar.
Yeah, really amazingly sweet, amazing, drippy, you know, thick balsamico that was, I had never experienced having the two things together, and it was just so beautiful. So I get the sweet wine with the cheese.
Yeah, but that's a pretty normal starter kind of thing. That's why Lambrusco when Lambrusco's high quality, it's a wine from the Veneto, but it's still, there's the trend of these wines beginning in Lombardia and headed east, and it's with all the cured meats and the hams. So when we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, we'll wrap up the last regions of the North, and we'll get down to a chef's challenge on WIPR.